On this week's episode of Back of the Grid, we'll be reviewing the Australian Grand Prix. Let's go. Hello and welcome to another edition of Back of the Grid. I'm your host, Stu, and I'm joined, as always, by Chris.
Hello, Stu.
And by Tom.
Hello.
Hello. Don't forget to subscribe if you're new. And if you really, really like us, if you're watching for us as well, why not join the Patreon and join our lovely community in Discord? I couldn't think of the word community there, but I got there in the end. Let's talk about the Australian Grand Prix, guys. Quick overall thought, enjoyable, not enjoyable. What do you think?
I came away... So I watched the version that was edited down from an hour and a half race to an hour and came away from it thinking that was a pretty decent race. And then I had a look online and the general feeling was a lot worse than that. So I feel like the half hour that was edited out was probably just a half hour nothing burger.
Yeah. There's... So in terms of, like, I guess result, yes, it's an interesting one, but I don't think, yeah, the whole race... As a, you could definitely get away with watching the 30 racing 30 or racing an hour and get rid of some just bloat. So
yeah, I will admit I did notice a lot. I watched the whole thing and I did notice, not live because I'm not a maniac. I did notice a lull around sort of 29, 30 laps and yeah, not it sort of quietened down a little bit and I was able to just relax and enjoy some cars going around the Formula One track.
Yeah,
without sort too of much tension.
Quiet for like, I don't know, 15, 20 laps maybe.
But like I did enjoy it though. I thought it was overall. Oh, yeah. I thought it was eventful. Thoroughly enjoyable. It was the kind of Formula One race that I like. You know, it was like not too intense, not the same winner as usual, and yeah, just a bit of drama at the beginning, couple of virtual safety cars. Yeah, it was good. Okay, shall we get into the actual race? Shall we talk about the interesting things rather than our boring opinions about it?
Shall I take us through?
Yeah, do it.
Carlos Sainz has a race off, has an operation, comes back and wins it.
Yeah.
Cue lots of jokes about weight saving and all of that business. Great drive, though. Like, really, really good drive from him.
Yeah, heaviest appendix ever recorded.
I mean, as a man who doesn't have a drive for next year, he's doing everything he needs to get a decent seat next year.
I mean, Ferrari was supposed to be like, we've sacked the wrong guy.
Right, like, you look at Ferrari's two drivers for next year, and... We're only three races in, but right now they've got the two secondary drivers in the relative pairings lined up for next year at the moment.
Love it.
Yeah, I mean, whoever ends up getting Carlos Sainz's signature for next year, he's going to be picking up a great driver. Like, I think he's just going to be able to go wherever he wants, honestly.
Yeah.
Dare you go one further and say at this very early stage in... the Formula One season that Sainz might be in with a shout for a world title this season? Dare we dream?
I mean, I think when we were doing the crazy predictions at the start of the year before anything started, I think I did something like say Sainz will be mathematically in contention with more than three races to go or something like that.
I think
there's still a legit thing. Like there's a lot of elements to it. There's the fact that Ferrari are not trying to replace him, they are going to be replacing him. There's the fact that, you know, the Ferrari looks a lot better this year anyway to actually let him compete. Like, I mean, yes, obviously what happened, but I think that Ferrari looked like it could have given, like he could have given Max a run for his money regardless. Like, yeah.
I think he had the best to win it anyway, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm excited to sort of see that play out properly, basically, and them actually have to race each other. And I don't think we're far from seeing that on a decent regular basis.
That is the weird thing about this race, is that after 2 years of basically your only chance of having someone other than Verstappen winning is you're hoping for something to happen to Verstappen, like happened at this race, to stop him winning. But on this occasion, I kind of feel like we were robbed of a bit of a race, because I do genuinely feel like Ferrari had the pace and Red Bull didn't. I don't think they ever really got it right the whole weekend.
Yeah. I mean, just look at Perez. Like, if the car was on form as people expect it to be, then he should have been on that podium. Starting from sixth, he should have been on that podium.
Should have easily got ahead. But it is a very low deg circuit, Australia, isn't it?
True. Yeah.
I mean, while you mentioned Perez, I guess we can quickly do him. As you say, he had that penalty that dropped him to sixth. He only gained one place. Originally, the team said they thought he had floor damage. It turns out he had a visor tear off stuck under the floor of his car somewhere that they reckon was massively affecting the downforce. So that's one Perez excuse. Perez also said that he didn't think Red Bull had the pace to win that race, regardless of what happened to Max. But then you would say that if you're in what's normally the fastest car and you've only come fifth. So I don't know. I'm prepared to give Perez the benefit of the doubt on this occasion, because we don't really know exactly where that Red Bull was, I don't think, this weekend. But practice indicated that it wasn't where you would expect it to be, I suppose.
Yeah. Verstappen then?
Verstappen, yeah. First retirement since Australia 2 years ago, which speaks volumes to the reliability they built
in
into
the
that
points
car.
As well. Every race in the points since.
It's unbelievable. And pretty much only Sainz has stopped him winning now since then as well, which is crazy in itself.
Yeah, well, Sainz is the only person that's won in that period that's not a Red Bull driver, right? I think.
Yeah, you're right.
Because he won Silverstone,
Singapore,
and then this.
Yeah.
So
wild. Yeah. But yeah, Verstappen out very early on, had one of his rear brakes stuck on. Pretty impressive fire and bits exploding by the end of it. It's crazy because we've gone into all the talk for the first couple of races was, oh no, this is going to be a completely dominant year. Three races in, the championship is Verstappen 51, Leclerc 47, Perez 46, Sainz 40. Like, if you looked at that championship without the context of watching the races, you'd think, wow, we're in for a really close season here, guys. Still could be. I mean,
three races in. I mean, Verstappen probably, there's an argument to say potentially Verstappen should have 76 points at least.
Well, with all the talk of, that's the thing, all the talk of the dominant, you'd expect him to have 76 points at least.
So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't a little bit unfortunate for Verstappen. Let's just give him some sympathy for a second.
Completely.
To have, did they reckon it was a visor tear off in his brake duct as well? Oh, no, it was a seized brake.
Yeah.
I mean, that is strange. But what I didn't appreciate was seeing him declaring it. Like, you could lip read him calling someone or something stupid in the garage.
Oh, really?
When it cut to him after it all happened and he got out of the car and he was in there, and it seemed a bit like, come on, mate, you're probably going to win the season anyway.
that's maybe a little much.
So mean about it. And as well, I found hilarious, I don't know if you guys watched it on the Sky coverage or the F1 coverage, but they seemed really, really eager to show as much of Max Verstappen off the track. I'm pretty sure we saw more of him off track than we have all season during actual races. Yeah,
I've heard people talking about this. I think that's one of the things they thankfully edited out of the hour-long version of the race that I watched.
It was ridiculous. Like, the camera was following around for ages. They just had this picture-in-picture of just him walking about with some security guards around him and a bunch of stuff going on around him, people following
that's
him.
It's bizarre.
This is not interesting. There's racing going on circuit. Good racing going on circuit. Mm. Why are we looking at Max Verstappen walking? You know, he's not in the race anymore. Give us a Formula One race.
Normally they'll give you one shot of the driver that retired on the pit wall or in the garage. Just be like, there he is.
Yeah.
And then that's it. And they'll get on with it.
Later on F1 TV, they actually did a replay of that as well, of what they'd already shown in the split screen. They showed it again.
I mean, there must have been at least 10 replays of him pulling into the pits. Like it
yeah.
was,
the, yeah, it was, like it was a definite montage. Overkill. They did like a montage yeah. of like everything. Max Verstappen's bad day. Montage.
Yeah, it was.
I guess it doesn't happen very often, so they've got to milk it for all it's worth.
Yeah,
yeah, it just seemed a bit extreme.
Yeah,
yeah. Anyway.
Next on the road were McLaren, third and fourth. I felt like McLaren were their own worst enemies a little bit this race. Like, they decided to pit Piastri first, who came in at the same time as Leclerc, which allowed them to then both undercut Norris. And then they had to faff around getting Piastri to let Norris back through to try and chase down Leclerc. I mean, ultimately, I don't think it really mattered. I think Leclerc had the pace on them anyway in that race. Bit faffy, but...
Bit of a faff. Norris definitely had the pace on Piastri. Oh, absolutely. Well. He finished a long way ahead of him.
No question they did the right thing swapping them.
Yeah,
Like, Piastri looks very much on Norris's pace in qualifying now, but he's definitely still missing that little bit in race pace. Getting closer, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a very solid position for him in season two.
you
sort of... I think I've reached this point with Piastri where you sort of forget how, like, junior within the sport he actually is, because he does compose himself quite well, and obviously he's more than willing to race your Leclerc's, your Norris's, your Sainz's that we've been around a while. So
yeah
it is hard to forget that, like, this is only like his 20 somethingth race and like the start of his second season sometimes, but it'll come, given time it'll come.
Very mature.
Norris has taken the record off Nick Heidfeld, I think it is now, of the most podiums in F1 without a win, which is a grim statistic to hold on to. Hopefully he sheds that one at some point.
Yeah. I'll go on.
I'll say, to be fair though, like, if you look at the final timing's a bit skewed because of the VSC at the end, but if you look at the traces of Leclerc and Norris, like, Norris was right on Leclerc's pace for basically the entire race.
Yeah.
So, you know, for McLaren to be shadowing Ferrari that closely is real, real good this early in the season for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a strange decision to pit Piastri first, I thought. Maybe he had some issue or something like
really
that.
Really strange, yeah. I think they were trying to protect against Russell undercutting them, but then there was traffic involved, so I don't think Russell was ever going to get close enough anyway. It felt a bit, strange one.
Speaking of Russell, let's get to the meat in this podcast.
Yeah. So the Alonso Russell incident on the final lap.
Now, before we get into any of this, Chris, I will let you read through what you've got to read through here to get us into it. But there are some hot takes on the internet.
So many hot takes. And interestingly, from what I've seen, it's almost 50-50 between this is fine and this is the worst thing that's ever happened.
Yeah.
It's really split people, this one.
Take us through it.
Yes, so we all saw what happened. Russell crashed. No contact between the cars, but Russell got very close to the back of Alonso and crashed on the final lap in turn, what is it, 6, I think?
Yeah, penultimate lap, not final lap.
Penultimate lap, sorry, yeah. Very quick, very tricky corner. Alonso post-race was given a drive-through penalty, which I believe was converted to 20 seconds.
Correct.
Yes.
And 3 license points.
Yes.
So the stewards, it's actually one of the best written steward reports I think I've ever seen. It was really extensive and very clear and talked through the thinking. So they talked about using the data from Alonso's car to sort of look at what he did. So on the way into turn 6, he lifted, very slightly braked, and downshifted about 100 meters earlier than he had on any other lap. Then he got back on the throttle slightly and upshifted again, then braked and downshifted again as normal to take the corner. The steward said Alonso told them that he had planned to take the corner differently to get a better exit, because obviously that corner exits onto the longest flat out section, which was one of the main overtaking points. But Alonso admitted he got taking the corner differently slightly wrong, which is why his input seemed kind of bizarre. The steward's reasoning for why they gave him a penalty is really interesting. It's a little lengthy, but I think it's worth reading through. So they said, in considering the matter, the stewards focus solely on the wording of the regulation, which states, at no time may a car be driven unnecessarily slowly, erratically, or in a manner which may be deemed potentially dangerous. So that's what they've done him on. They say specifically in this case, the stewards have not considered the consequences of the crash. I call nonsense on that because if Russell hadn't crashed, this would none of this would have happened.
None of this would have happened, yeah.
I think even if Russell had gone off through the gravel and back on the track, I don't think any of this would have happened. So
yeah, I agree.
I don't necessarily buy that line. However, further, the stewards consider that they do not have sufficient information to determine whether Alonso's manoeuvre was intended to cause Russell problems or whether, as he stated, he was simply trying to get a better exit. And then they said, should Alonso have the right to try a different approach to the corner? Yes. Should Alonso be responsible for dirty air that ultimately caused the incident? No. However, he did choose to do something with whatever intent that was extraordinary. Yes, by his own account of the incident, he did.
Yeah.
And in the opinion of his stewards, he drove in a manner that was at the very least potentially dangerous given the high speed nature. So as we said, this has massively split people. We've had a lot of racing drivers on Twitter saying, oh, are we not allowed to take different approaches into the corner to slow our rivals anymore? Which is fine. Like, there's an art to that. I've seen a lot of people pointing to Magnussen in the last race, to Perez in Abu Dhabi in 2021.
Yeah, like the old, you know, the old park it on the apex technique is a very valid technique in corners where that's possible.
But there's a difference between an apex and 100 meters before a corner.
Well, I think that amounts to, dare I say it, that amounts to a bit of a brake test.
It's flirting with it almost, isn't it?
I mean, I think there's a reason that it is divisive, and it's probably because the ultimate cause of it in reality is the way that it sort of washes out the aero for Russell, where it's like it's not a traditional brake check, like what you're saying. I know what you're saying, it gets close to it, but there's plenty of time for Russell to react and make the corner. In the grand scheme of things, regardless of what Alonso's done, the thing that appeared to really be the problem is a loss of aero and probably losing the back end because of it, from what I could tell from, like, when you watch his onboard, like, as he goes to actually slow for the apex, he starts to lose the back end as he turns in, which is, I assume, dirty air. So I think that, while it's one of those where I don't want to condone people, like, intentionally sort of dangerously obstructing someone, you don't want to condone that. But also on the other side, Alonso can't be responsible for, like, wash off his car as well.
So I think a lot of this talk of, you know, who's responsible for aero, blah, 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 is nonsense anyway. To me, none of that matters. Like,
Formula One, we all know
Formula One cars are aero dependent, and we all know that if you're close behind another car, you're going to lose a lot of downforce, right? That's just common knowledge in Formula One. Every driver knows it. Every spectator knows it who's been watching it long enough. So it's a non-argument for me. I think that's part of the science of the sport, and it's not necessarily, yes, it's related to what's happened, but it's not like a direct cause of what's happened. Like, if Alonso hadn't pulled the brake, slowed the way he did, where he did, and caused Russell to get so close to him, then probably Russell's staying on the track.
Yeah.
I think, at best, Alonso's just made a bad decision and cocked up a little bit in his attempt to defend his position.
I think when you look at the telemetry, that would be what it is because when you look at the telemetry, there's definitely a lift and then a moment of, shit, I've gone too soon there, getting back on it and then lifting. Because if you do, I don't know if either of you have seen the side by side of previous lap versus the current lap. So you can obviously see that even the second time when he lifts back off again, he's still slowing earlier for the corner than he did the previous lap. Yeah. And you can see that obviously, although that in F1 racing terms is like a split second, there is definitely a moment where he sort of lifts and goes, shit, that's too soon, gets back on, and then still lifts earlier for the corner than he would have regardless. So
there's an argument to say, well, the question is, why lift so soon in the first place? How? I mean, these are the best drivers in the world. Like, do you believe that Alonso is such a bad driver that he can't judge when
and
to?
This is my one of my thoughts. Like, he says he was trying to take a different approach to the corner and sort of made a mess of it. Like, Alonso is a wily old fox. Yeah, he's always been trying tricks, and I think he's a better driver than to make a mistake. Like,
yeah.
Slowing too early for a corner is a pretty fundamental thing for a racing driver. I'm not sure I buy that from him.
It just doesn't add up, does it?
Like, I don't think for a second he was trying to make Russell crash.
No,
he was he was trying to compromise Russell's line through that corner so he could get a better run to avoid being done ultimately.
That's absolutely a valid thing that is a valid technique to do in racing. It's just you have to do it in places where it's sensible to do it, where it's an option. Yeah. Like, I don't feel like that corner is necessarily a place where it's a sensible place to do that because of the nature of Formula One and the nature of the cars and the way things work with them.
Yeah, the way he's done it is he's clearly dangerous because this has happened.
Well, I mean, the stewards said it was dangerous. And, you know, that if the stewards have come to that conclusion with a very detailed explanation, then it's hard. It's very, very difficult to argue with the stewards. I think some of the people online, it's just like so passionate about it. Like there's one guy on one of the better Formula One, motor racing sort of blog news websites that I read. There was one guy in like every comment section related to this incident that was just going off on me, like going mental. Just like, dude, like you need to step away from your keyboard and just go and calm down for a bit. I don't understand why people, I don't really get why people are being so upset about it. I think it's because it's George Russell in a Mercedes. I think that's a lot of it is it's George Russell. It's Mercedes haters.
It's Mercedes haters and or Alonso fans, I think, fans, is part of
big,
it.
Big Alonso fans. It turns out a very, very passionate group of people.
I've seen a lot of people saying it's because Johnny Herbert was one of the driver stewards this weekend, and apparently he doesn't like Alonso. Like,
right. Right. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, all of that being said, I'm far from 100% that he should have been penalised for it. I think
it's a really message.
Yeah, I think
they don't want people doing that. They don't want people driving like that. And they shouldn't be driving like that. It's not sensible.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a difference between what, like you say, some of the racing drivers and stuff that have made comment on it saying, well, we're not allowed to, you know, park on an apex, so to speak, and compromise.
Though, isn't it, that?
But yeah, that is a different instance, and I think there's no way of Alonso like knowing out and out what was going to happened. I don't think there is. And his intention was his intention. Like, I think what he said is basically right, that like I was essentially trying to take a different line through that corner, but the end goal was to compromise George's exit, not him get a better exit. He's very carefully worded. He means the same thing, but he's very carefully worded it to move some of that responsibility away. But I think if you're intentionally slowing 50 meters earlier than anybody else is slowing,
100.
Well, yeah, 100 probably at this point. Yeah,
it was
to basically kind of psych out the guy behind you.
Yeah,
it becomes dangerous at that point, especially when we're in a series like. If you're in GT cars or something and you've got brake lights, that's something different in itself because at least then there's something for the driver to react to.
A signal.
These cars, don't have that, and the closing speeds are horrendous at times. Like, it is scary, and I think that's the precedent that the stewards are going for, is there's nothing wrong with driving tactics and like your wily old moves, so to speak, but they have to, there has to be a line somewhere. And as long as they stick to this line, as long as they stick to this line and other people doing it, regardless of the outcome. And this is the very important bit there. I've been a very strong drum banger for they police the outcome, not the incident, on this podcast. If they are genuine in saying, we have not taken the outcome, but the action is what we have considered, that, and then they give out similar penalties for other people doing the same thing, regardless of the outcome, then all power to them. That's fine. And but I think that's the important bit coming out of this, I think, for me.
Another aspect of this is, how often do you actually see this type of thing happening? Like, not very
often. It's not, it's not a common thing.
You see someone lifting and touching the brake 100 metres before they'd done it on the last lap. That's unusual. It's a highly unusual thing to do.
Yeah.
Whether it's defensive, whatever, or not, it's a strange, it's not a tactic you see people using to defend even that often. Yeah. Really,
the closest recent example I can think of is Saudi Arabia a couple of years ago, when Hamilton and Verstappen were sort of playing DRS games, and then Verstappen was asked to let Hamilton by, and he did it mid-straight, and Hamilton ran into him. I mean, that was a different situation.
It was very different
scenario. But Verstappen was still penalised under the same sort of rule at that point in time.
Dangerous driving.
Yeah.
Braking in a, I mean, braking on a straight, driving unnecessarily slowly, that, you name it, you know, they're all there. Yeah. It's all there in the rule book for you to get someone for doing it. It's against the rules. So yeah, I'm on the side of the stewards with this one. I think there's an aspect of Alonso, because there's a whole other argument Alonso brought up, that was, I've been fighting derating and stuff like this up until that point. And then actually afterwards, if you watch the onboard to the end of the race, until he comes back into the pits, he does have real issues with his throttle. But I don't know whether he's like somehow activated the pit limiter or something for the remainder of it to because he's a smart bloke, he's not daft.
It does seem to happen after the incident and not before, doesn't
it? The thing is, it's not just his throttle in the incident, though. He like actively brakes as well.
He touches the brake,
Brakes and downshifts. He dabs the brake. It's not just that.
So we're with the stewards then, are we? Are we collectively?
I think in general terms, yes. I think that, like I say, that if they are doing what they're saying they are doing, I'm with them, which is, we've policed the bit of driving that led to the incident, but not based off the outcome of the incident.
Okay.
And if they would have penalised him the same, regardless of Russell, like if Russell had finished behind him, if Russell, that's what I'm saying. So like, I think it'll come round to the next time something similar to this happens, there's going to be a lot of people around this sport compare it instantly to this.
Oh, for sure.
And so they need to be very, very careful.
One last thought on this, which we may not agree on quite so much.
Go on.
I think all of this talk around the Alonso penalty has saved Russell some blushes a little bit, because however unusual and weird the situation is, there is still an element of it for me, which is that Russell just had a crash on his own without touching anything.
Well, it's
a weird situation, I admit, but do I think every driver on the grid in the same position would have had the same incident Russell had?
Yeah.
I'm not so sure.
That's kind of where I was before we got into the specifics of it, which is why I was saying at the start, like, I don't buy that the crash is like solely on what Alonso was doing. Like, I'm not condoning the way he was going about it, but also I think that this is why it's important for me. The other thing I've been going on about in the last 5 minutes is them policing it the same regardless of the outcome, because had he caught that, or had he made it around the corner, they need to have policed it the same and said, you have been driving your car like what we would call erratically or unsafely, regardless of if George actually gets past you on the lap or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think there is an element of he was still a long way from Alonso in the grand scheme of things. Like, he wasn't having to take evasive action.
Not at the point he was losing, not at the point he lost the car. He was like 2 meters off the back of him.
Yeah, it's fair.
It's possible for cars to follow each other through there. I think there are arguments to say that like it didn't have to be like the terminal crash that it was. Like it could have.
No, I think it happened so fast. I think if you're in the car behind, I think most drivers would have had a similar incident in that situation, because you're not expecting to suddenly be so close behind the car. Like you're driving like you've driven that corner, every corner you've driven it up to now, expecting the car ahead of you to do probably something similar, to not try anything silly there. And for him to get so close, I think if he'd been any closer, he would have. If he'd been literally, I don't think he would have even had time to take evasive action the way it panned
quite
out
possibly.
Anyway. That's the thing. Like, he was so close and it all happened so quick that I think he was kind of left to, he sort of hung out to dry almost in a way. Like, there wasn't much he could, I don't think there was anything really much that he could have done about it. I don't see what Russell could have done differently in that situation. Like, any driver is the car ahead of him is slow, is going to move up to the back of them. And really, he had no choice but to move up to the back of him because he slowed so unexpectedly. So I don't know. I think most of them are having a similar incident myself. I disagree with that.
I think there's an element of whether this is what he was doing or not is not for me to say, because obviously I'm not the professional driver, Formula One driver he is. But I think the way I look at it when I think back to his onboard is he still goes to like properly attack the apex. Like, there's a lot of turning, and I think that contributes to him losing the rear end as much as he does.
But and there's I think only one that, line through there anyway, though.
There is, but I think that you don't attack it as aggressively. Don't get me wrong, you're in the gravel, but you will skirt the gravel and the curb and you will get out of it. Like, as in bailing on the corner is possible at that point. And I think that maybe, I don't know if this is where Chris is coming from, but I think there's an element of it, despite what Alonso was doing, it was potentially savable.
I think I'm maybe just using previous evidence of mistakes from Russell to find it hard to believe he was completely blameless in it. He does have mistakes in him, particularly late in races, but
yeah.
Maybe I'm being overly harsh, I don't know.
I think that's been a bit harsh. I think, you know, I think you'd need superhuman senses to react to what had happened ahead of you in such a short time to avoid...
Best 20 drivers in the world, Stu.
Well, yeah. and they currently can't spot an apex, can't spot a breaking point.
Right, let's rattle through a few others before we get to the next big bit of meat in this podcast sandwich.
That's what it is.
Quick word on Hamilton. Pretty poor weekend again. I mean, obviously, ultimately, it was an engine failure that put him out, but he was struggling all weekend out in Q2.
He went so early that it was... I don't think we really got a chance to see... Because that car usually gets better as a race goes on, we saw with Russell. But we didn't really get to see Hamilton sort of show his hand, did we?
I want to say he'd climbed up from... 11th to like 9th maybe, so he gained a couple of places.
He started on the softs, and then he pitted and went back down to, so started, overtook a couple,
that was it,
pitted, went down to 11th, and then shortly after his pit stop he was gone.
He's not happy in that car.
No, not non-event this weekend for Mercedes, really, in the end.
Team Formula One's Minardi, Tsunoda had a great weekend again. Dragged that car into Q3, lost a place or two throughout the race, but crucially he was close enough on pace to the Aston Martins that when Alonso got that penalty, he was able to benefit from it. Finished 8th in the end. After sort of losing his head a bit in the first race, he's like really settled down after that, and he's yeah, driving really well, I think.
Yeah.
Continues to improve, which is what he needs to do in that position.
Exactly.
Ricciardo, meanwhile, oof.
Needs to do the same thing, but
he does. Out in Q1, he lost a lap to track limits. Started 18th. He only managed to get as high as 12th. He just doesn't. There's just something missing again, isn't there?
Where would his deleted lap have put him? By the way, I forgot to actually check.
He would have got through to Q2 with that deleted lap. Yeah, like he said, it's not the same as his McLaren struggles right now. Like, it's not that he's lacking confidence. He's doing what the car's doing what he wants it to do, but the pace isn't there for some reason. Tsunoda's handily outperforming him three races in so far.
Yeah.
And yeah, he really needs to turn things around.
Well, you got Logan Sargeant lurking in the garage as well.
Exactly, yeah. Constantly lurking.
Yeah.
Yeah, it turns out when you build a car that doesn't munch its tires, like, it's all right. I feel like they've been making decent top end of midfield cars for years now that just eat their tires, and now they've solved that one problem. Points finish.
There was a period where they made decent mid pack cars but couldn't put the wheel on them. That was also a period they went through.
Famously at the Australian Cup, both cars.
In multiple years as well. Yeah. They had like 2 years in a row where they did the exact same thing here. So, yeah, I mean, getting beyond that's been a challenge in the past. But, yeah, it's decent finish. And it's not like it's on merit, isn't it? It's not. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's an element of the likes of Verstappen being out. But in theory, Hülkenberg's still in the points even without that. So, It's still a very good finish for them, I think. Especially when we've talked about how important it is for the teams that are like the bottom five to be scoring points at all. Them getting 3 points out of that for a ninth and a tenth is really important when the likes of Sauber and Alpine and Williams are struggling. So
Ayo Komatsu just has played us all. Like pre-season, he was like, yeah, we're going to be starting right at the back. It's going to be a tough, tough time. Freaking two out of three races have scored points now. Speaking of penalising results rather than events, Hulk's defence against Albon, I thought, was pretty dodgy. I think he was a little lucky to get away with that.
Was that the squeeze into 11 in the braking
zone? He was a bit moving in the braking zone, yeah.
It was borderline, I would say.
I must have missed that.
I didn't love it. Stewards barely looked at it, so it couldn't have been that bad. But right, speaking of Albon, let's talk about Williams.
This is ridiculous, I think. But
so Albon, he went and crashed his car in FP1. The team are so behind, they do not have a third chassis available. Mm-hmm. So they were already down to one car, and they made the decision to give Logan Sargeant's car to Alex Albon for the remainder of the weekend. James Vowles said, well, Logan should not have to suffer from a mistake that he did not make. Every race counts when the midfield is tighter than ever. So we've made the call based on our best potential to score points this weekend. Decision was not made lightly, and we cannot thank Logan enough for his graceful acceptance. He had a choice. Demonstrating his dedication, blah, 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 blah.
True player.
Yeah, so one driver crashes a car. They take the other driver's car off him to give it to the guy who crashed.
I understand the logic, but it kind of stinks.
Yeah.
I don't think it's fair to take the drive away from... it's Formula One. It's brutal. Like, things aren't fair in Formula One. Performance is always the key factor. But even so, even with all that logic and all of that sort of, putting your eggs in the best basket attitude, there's just something not right about one driver making a mistake and getting the other driver's car. It just doesn't sit well.
I think that's the biggest bit of it. I think if there were other reasons for them to be in this scenario that they could only enter one car, I'd be more on board. But the fact that Alex Albon has crashed his car and it cannot be repaired or replaced, that's got no bearing on anyone except Alexander Albon in that scenario, in my opinion. Like, I mean, it feels Ferrari-esque. It's like if Sainz crashed and they were just like, well, we can't repair you, Carlos, so we're going to give it Charles. Like, it feels like a Ferrari move, not a Williams move.
That was an interesting chat in our Discord over the weekend, actually. It was like, is there any other team on the grid who would do a similar thing with the pair of drivers they have?
This is interesting. So the reason this has happened is because there is such a gulf between these two drivers, right? They've got one good driver who's scoring all their points. They've got another driver who's, let's be completely honest, kind of hanging on a little bit, really. What other teams up and down the grid have that? I would say the closest is probably Aston.
Yeah, but then they'd never do it because
they would do it because
we all know why
he's Stroll.
Yeah,
I don't. Do you know what? I don't think they'd do it regardless. I don't think even if it was like if it was Sargent and Alonso, I don't think they'd go, well, Fernando's crashed his car, Logan, get out. Like,
do you know what? I don't think Alonso would accept someone else's car.
Yeah,
I think Alonso would turn around and say, "No, no, I crashed. He can drive."
Yeah,
yeah, quite possibly actually.
I really think that. I do think as much as we've just sort of sat here bashing Alonso. To be fair, no one's been sat here bashing Alonso at all. We've just been talking about what happened and our opinions on exactly what happened. But I do think Alonso would just say, no, I'm not driving.
Sorry. Yeah.
Like, possibly, morally, yeah. I think it's questionable to take someone else's car driving for me.
Yeah, and I think especially when it's your mistake that's put you in that situation.
Exactly.
Anyway. Yeah.
Like, How does Albon feel about all this? Like, he must feel really guilty and really uncomfortable.
Got to be awkward.
I mean, he's got to feel worse that he didn't manage a point. Like,
yeah, well, I mean,
he came very close.
Where would Sargent have been, though? He would have been at the back. Let's be honest. Yeah. He wouldn't have been anywhere near where Albon finished.
I think, like you just said, Stu, like, you know, if we've got to be realistic about where Logan Sargent is, like, he is driving to keep his seat right now. Like, as things currently stand, I don't think he's going to be on the grid next year. He needs to really do something to prove
that action from Williams confirms he's not on the grid next season.
This is my biggest problem with it. I think this, as much as I totally get James Vowell's logic behind the decision, I just think it does more harm than good because basically, three races into a season, you're saying to one of your drivers, we have no faith in you.
Yeah.
You might as well tell him now he's not driving next year because the guy was already like struggling to perform. He needs to up things. What's this going to do to his confidence? Like, I really think he's done more harm than good. I really like James Vowell. I like the way he goes around running a team, but I really don't think I can agree with him on this one.
Mm. Same.
Alpine
looked better, actually. Ocon especially, like, seemed to have a bit of pace, but I think they maybe had a bit of a pit stop snafu, I think, at one point, or they had a bit of poor time with the VSD. Still bad, still no points, but slight glimmers of hope. Slowly.
One of them was better than the Saubers, even if it was the Saubers.
Well, this is the thing. We get right to the back with Sauber, who... What are they doing this season? They just had another shocker. He started in qualifying when Joe was on a pretty good lap trying to get out of Q1, and then half his front wing just disintegrated all on its own, riding a curb that every other car had been riding the entire weekend. It just felt
there were one or two bits of floor damage from that curb, though, as well. It wasn't just Joe getting damaged, car damage.
The turn 10 was it? Turn 10 exit, I think it was.
I'm not sure whichever. Yeah.
The fast left,
there were a couple. There were a couple that were causing problems with cars. So it wasn't on his own. I think he just... But obviously, that's the end of the day. Like, don't put your car in places where it's going to get damaged. I think that's driver. I don't think that's necessarily the car's fault for being too vulnerable. I think it's...
I suppose. He seemed...
It's not going to get damaged.
He seemed baffled by it, though. Like, the way he reacted seemed like he'd just driven the same line. He'd driven every lap, and this time his front wing seemed to break. And the worst problem was it was the only one of that spec they had, so he had to start from the pit lane because he had to go back to an old spec. But none of it mattered because their pit stops were shocking again. Like, they'd already, I think, got into the weekend saying, we're just going to accept 4, 5, 6 second pit stops to make sure we get the wheels on until we've got to the bottom of this wheel nut problem we're having, which in itself is mad that they've not fixed the problem yet. And then in Bottas's stop, instead of the wheel nut cross-threading, it just popped out of the wheel gun, skittered out into the fast lane of the pit lane, which earned them a five. I didn't see it, actually.
They showed a replay of it. The commentators totally missed it. They were just watching a replay, wondering what they were watching, a slow-mo replay of a Sauber pit stop for. But you do see the little wheel nut just just buzz off into the fast lane.
Yeah, they got a €5,000 fine for it because anything entering the fast lane is bad news bears. Bottas was stationary for 28 seconds, and he was actually ahead of both Haas cars at that point in the race. So potentially lost points.
We don't really
there.
Know where that Sauber is because of all this. Like, that Sauber could be half decent. It could be around the level of the Haas.
There's glimmers every now and again, like in practice and qualifying, like, oh, actually there is some pace in this car, and then you just all falls apart again. Like,
yeah.
I mean, Andreas Seidel's been there like, what, a year or two now. He's got his way with Audi coming in sooner and 100%. Yeah. They need to start doing something about this team now, because right now they're just
green
a
cars,
of a
man. Unlucky. Yeah. Green. Not British Racing green. That's totally different. That's a different colour.
Just that's its own colour.
Green cars are unlucky. Okay, so we need to pick a driver of the day. It's got to be Science, right?
The obvious answer is Science
for me.
I think
an easy one.
Honorable mention for Tsunoda, I think. I think he had a really good race.
Yeah.
Actually, one of the few drivers we didn't mention was Stroll, who quietly had quite a good race as well.
Yeah,
but yeah, Sainz is the obvious choice. I struggle to look past him.
Yeah, easy. Move of the day.
This one is Tsunoda from me, who passed Gasly at turn 13 from about a postcode away, slung it up the inside. Very, very nice.
Yeah.
Very controlled move.
And we've also got Piastri on Alonso, turn 14.
Yeah, so Piastri had a go at Alonso into turn 13, and it didn't quite work out, but he kind of stayed in it and got him into turn 14. And I don't think I've ever seen a car get passed in turn 14 before.
Oh, I do remember that one. I liked that one, actually. Yeah,
that was a good one, too.
I think that's my vote. So, Tom, you get the deciding vote between those two.
I mean, I was very much in agreement with the Tsunoda one, as Chris said it, so... I'm going to have to stick with my original vote.
Yeah, that also, to be fair, that was very good as well. I don't mind being beaten on that one. And the last one?
Oh, that's me, isn't it?
So we've got Sauber.
Honestly, what the fuck are we doing here?
Yeah, like, they were already bad and they seem to be getting worse. Like, I don't know what they're doing over there.
It is pretty, like... Yeah, it is one of those things.
It's
that you
fundamentals.
You're kind of like mind blown by how many times this has happened. Like, very, very WTF worthy. I think there's an argument to say that potentially the race should have been red flagged at the point where Russell was resting in the middle of the track, of a live racetrack.
Yeah, with the majority of the field still to come round because of where he was. Yeah. Was he sixth at the time?
I think so. But the nearest car to him was Stroll, and he was like halfway around. He was a long way back. So
have you
that's
seen
the
Stroll's,
only reason I can think of.
Have you seen Stroll's on board?
Yeah.
It's a little scary because it's a
pretty blind corner.
He goes
through a bit.
Yeah, considering there's a double waved yellow in front of him.
Yeah, you can hear his race engineer being like, yellow, 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 instant head. And he still like gives it a few too many beans around the corner. Like, I don't, given how late in the race it was, I don't necessarily mind just calling a VSC because that slows down everyone to the pace they'd probably be doing behind if a red flag was called anyway.
Yeah.
But it still took them a bit too long to even do the VSC.
Yeah.
Like, the second that incident happened, it was obvious to everybody watching
this race is finished.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Chris, you were saying someone on the internet said Russell was calling for a red flag because he wanted to keep his result.
Yeah, someone's trying to claim that Russell asking for a red flag when he was on his side, stranded in the middle of the track because he'd mentally been like, if the race gets a red flag, they'll do the result on countback and then I'll keep my points for sixth place.
Have you heard the panic in his voice?
Right.
He's calling for
He's definitely more about, I don't want to get hit by somebody coming around.
The mental gymnastics required to come up with these kind of conspiracy theories.
People are insane.
Ridiculous. That could be my WTF, to be honest.
someone making that claim on the internet, having an opinion
about a race driver who's stranded in the middle of a track.
I mean, I suppose the other thing is we could do is Williams swapping their drivers. Like, give the guy who's crashed and crashed at the same track the previous year, possibly even at the same corner the previous year. God, Albon came close to bidding it again in qualifying as well at one point.
Yeah, there was.
It's like, Alex, you cannot do that. They've said as well, they've said there's a 90% chance they will have two cars for the next race. They're not even 100% convinced they'll be able to get a second chassis ready.
Okay, this is my WTF. How do Williams not have a spare tub? That's what I want to know. That's my WTF. That's my
Excel, mate.
It's Excel spreadsheets. The line got deleted for tub three.
Yeah. Actually, you're right. Like, it's...
three races in, they still don't have a spare tub. Yeah. That's bizarre. That's unusual. You wouldn't expect that.
So, yeah. And I think they've said, even before this at the weekend, they weren't expecting to have one ready for Japan and possibly China as well.
Like, how does it happen? Is it budget related or is it cost cap related?
No, it's pure.
Hold off on making one.
It's pure behind schedule incompetence.
Yeah, it's organizational.
The way to put it. It's organizational. They were so far behind with the development of the car in general that they struggled to have
logistics and supply chain. Shall we call it?
Yeah, let's call it that.
Yeah, let's
diplomatic. Let's be diplomatic.
That's politer than what I said.
Okay, shall we move on to predictions?
Yes, I'll run us through predictions. So I think looking at it, I was the only person out of us to get any points, which I would, to be fair, I was slightly surprised at, if I'm totally honest with you, with the race results. In terms of overall, we had a single person leading the way this week. It was Sarah Blust with 3 out of 5. That was our highest score. And Sarah was the only person to score that. She had Max in fastest in Q3, the 16 finishers, and then Norris's podium in third place. All three of her predictions there that came and rung true. Steen Nielsen, however, still leads the way overall with 9 points there. And then a quick dip into the fantasy leagues. Ricky Bobby Racing and Fast Track Racing were both tied for the win this week in Australia with 251 points. So that means Ricky Bobby Racing stays top of that leaderboard with 735. And then over in Grid Rival World, Mighty Hawk 44, who actually won last race, scored 1,086. So some good solid contracts there that maybe don't include Verstappen if you're managing to win two races in a row. That's good. Overall, Mighty Hawk also leads with 2,958 points.
Very good. Shall we move on to the inbox?
Let's do some inbox. Charlotte Taylor says, F1 is supposed to be the pinnacle of motorsport. This weekend, we had Sauber struggling to put the tyres on, Williams not able to have two cars in a race, and my question is, what is going on with F1 this year? It's one thing after another, and at the moment, it's all going wrong.
Well, I mean, Sauber pit stops is just... I think they've obviously got some issue with the design of their setup at the moment that they need to resolve, and they haven't had an opportunity because we're in the flyaways. They haven't had a proper opportunity to really fully solve it. I think that's the root cause of the Sauber thing. Williams have always been a little bit sort of organizationally stunted, shall we say, and they're working on it. So hopefully they'll learn from it, and they won't find themselves in this position again this time next year.
I think what amazes me about this more is the team that can't even put a wheel on a car properly in Q1 still had a car 7/10 behind Max Verstappen in a Red Bull, and the team that haven't even managed to build a third car in time were 7/10 behind Max Verstappen in a Red Bull in Q2. Like, the fact that you have such gulfs in size of company and organization and budget and all these things, and the gaps are still that small, is just wild.
Yeah,
it just goes to show, even at the bottom of the grid, how good the people involved in F1 are.
Yeah, it was kind of like the comparison we were doing with Alpine in the last couple of episodes, where I was saying, like, in Q3 or whatever it was, first race of the season, despite how bad Alpine were, the entire grid was within a second of each other. Yeah. It's like, it does show how small these margins actually are right now, which is impressive in itself.
You know what else it shows? How restrictive the rule book is.
That's very true.
Next one, Chris.
Next one, a couple of link questions here. First one from Kilowog, who says it's the second season in a row Carlos has looked the class of the non-Max grid. Do you think Ferrari will sabotage him in favour of Leclerc, and is Carlos driving his way into Checo's seat? And Simon Molyneux adds, do you think Ferrari are regretting or are going to regret signing Hamilton for Megabooks when Carlos Sainz continues to put in stellar races? What advantage do Ferrari think a 39-year-old brings to the team that the seemingly ever-improving 10 years younger Sainz can't?
Seven world championships, maybe?
Yeah, yeah, I mean...
Ferrari know they can't claim those retrospectively, right?
No, but yeah, but he has shown that he's good enough to earn them, right? Like,
there's not a team on the grid, maybe with the exception of Red Bull while Verstappen is there, that would turn down the opportunity to sign Lewis Hamilton. Exactly. Likewise, there's not a team on the grid that would turn down the opportunity to sign Max Verstappen. That being said, I do believe right now Ferrari have got the best driver pairing in F1.
Yeah.
It'd be even better if they had Sainz and Hamilton together. Oh.
Well, I mean, they've got the most overrated driver in Formula 1 and somehow the most underrated driver in Formula 1 in the same team.
Based on current performance, Sainz and Russell would be the best pairing they could get. Yeah. But yeah, I do think Sainz and Leclerc are... I think the closest match is maybe McLaren, actually.
Yeah.
Mm. But yeah, it's Carlos Sainz is like this losing his seat could have really messed with him and like knocked his confidence. And clearly it's just done the opposite. Like he's
not
driving as well as he ever has.
Organized him, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And also, you know, the question from Kilowog about will Ferrari sabotage Sainz this year? I don't think they will. I think team principles gone by, that would have happened. But I think with Fred, that won't happen.
Yeah, I think so as well.
He's a much more level-headed kind of... He sees results and nothing else.
Yeah.
He's the best thing that's happened to Ferrari in... basically, ever. I think, since the like Schumacher, Ross Brawn, John Todd era.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. So. Final question. it's from Benson. He says, hey man, do you think Red Bull are going to get even more radical and replace Danny Rick with Lawson in the next few races, as rumours suggest?
Yeah, today's rumour is Danny Rick's got two races to turn it around, or Liam Lawson's in the car in Miami.
On today's episode of I've Got My Tinfoil Hat On, I don't know. If we get halfway through the season and he's still having a shocker, then I could maybe believe it. But I think this early in the season, while they're still learning the car and trying to find a sweet spot for both drivers, then I think it's a bit pie in the sky for now.
This is the way it works, though, when you're a Toro Rosso or a Red Bull driver. Like, you can have a full season, but you've got to spread it over the course of two. Otherwise you don't get the chance. Like, you've got to start in one season and finish in another, but you can't have more than one full season.
And with the greatest respect in the world, if Nyck de Vries could last 10 races, there's no way Danny Rick's lasting less than that.
Exactly.
Like, Red Bull as an organization have a lot of love and a lot of loyalty to him. I think they're gonna give him the full season for sure. Right now, like, this year was supposed to be Danny Rick proving he's ready to go back to Red Bull. Three races in, he's far from doing that, but I think they'll give him the full year to give it a good go.
You know, at the same time, it's supposed to be the season where Perez proves he deserves to be at Red Bull, and he just hasn't yet.
No.
Maybe a seat will open up. If it starts getting tight, and which it looks like it might right now, it looks possible suddenly, then maybe Perez is given the boot and they chuck Tsunoda in there if Tsunoda keeps driving the way he is.
I have a feeling driver market wise, someone pretty early this year is going to pull the trigger on signing a driver and everything's going to go crazy. Like, remember a number of years ago when Ferrari out of the blue announced Vettel was leaving and Sainz was taking the seat, and suddenly the whole driver market went insane.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, Hamilton's Ferrari signing sort of rattled the cage and got everyone.
That's the technical starting point of it, but I think the proper pin in it is where Sainz is going next, and that's what will trigger the rest of the effect, because everyone's kind of holding the breath on that, I think, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's a few teams speaking to Sainz, and Sainz is essentially playing it cool and putting in the performances like he is to make sure he gets the best deal he possibly can.
He can choose where he wants to go I think
especially after this weekend, he has upped his stock massively in that regard.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Interesting comment from Paul in the Discord. He said, I think Danny Ric would do better than Yuki in the Red Bull. I think there might be some truth to that. I think Danny Ric is maybe good at driving good cars, but struggles more in bad cars than a lot of other drivers.
I think there's an element in the way that him and Verstappen drive on the nose of the car a lot as well. I think that's, it was like Vettel's strength. That's why Vettel was good there. It's why Ricciardo and Vettel were, Ricciardo and Verstappen were toe-to-toe briefly when they were together. Like, I think there's an element of that. And maybe this is one of the chinks in Danny Ric's armour. Maybe he's not a set up and find the right car guy. Like, he's got to be in the right car and he can make it work, but he can't turn a poor car into the right car. Maybe that's the weakness.
Yeah, it does look that way. It does look that way right now.
I do also suspect that just the way ground effect cars drive doesn't suit him as much as the previous generation did. I think that might also be part of that.
Yeah, that's possible. Right. Anyway, I think we can call that a fully made podcast sandwich. We'll call it a day there. You can find us on social media in all the usual places, on Facebook, on Twitter, Instagram, you name it. If you're watching on YouTube, please remember to hit the subscribe button. If you like what you see, if you really like what you see, join our Patreon and become a member of our Discord chat. We've got a lovely community of people who are all really, really nice, unlike most of the Formula One internet, from what I've seen this week. It's a really, really safe, nice place to talk about Formula One. If you do like us, please consider joining our Discord by becoming a patron. And that is it for this week. So we will see you next week for our preview of the Japanese Grand Prix. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye, Rob.